two after the top of the hour. Now let's turn our attention to music. We're going to be joined by Ira Tucker Jr. Ira is a publicist. He's been in music all his life. His sister sang with the Supremes. His dad was a lead singer for the Dixie Hummingbirds, and he was Stevie's publicist for several decades. Ira, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Excellent. How about yourself? How are you feeling?
So far, so good.
All right. Ira, let me ask you this. What makes a song a country song as opposed to just a pop song or a soul song? What's the difference?
Well, I think it's basically it involves lyrics, style, instrumentation. You know, once those things come together, you get the feel of just what the song is and what genre it's in. But if you were talking about Beyonce's album, I seriously do not think that that album is a country album. I think that she has gone beyond expectations and beyond the boundaries of country music.
Well, the country folks are upset because they think she should stay in her lane. And, you know, they want to preserve that lane just like they try to do with golf. But as you know, once we get an opportunity in any endeavor, we can dominate. I think that's their concern. But you say it's not a country album. So it's a Beyonce album then? Is that how you see it?
I see it as a Beyonce album. I see it as someone who has developed as an artist to a point that is way beyond what most people thought she could do. I think the interpretation that she renders in those songs that she sings, her voice, the fluidity of her voice, the fact that she can make her voice work for any situation and any lyric, I think is the key to this. This album, to me, is equivalent to what Songs in the Key of Life was to Stevie. This is a major, major piece. And the fact that she executes on such a high level only makes you realize that what's coming down the road for her is going to be even more. It's going to be, because this girl really did it. She didn't play on this one. And when she went to that event in 2016 and they didn't make her feel comfortable. Well, this is a statement to that effect, saying that, you know, you made me uncomfortable. Now I'm going to show you just what I can do and what you're about. Nobody owns any music. There is no lane. You don't stay in a lane. You're as an artist, you're supposed to go out and reach out and try different things and apply your craft in certain areas, different areas. You don't stay in a lane. And nobody owns anything in terms of musicality. You don't own it. It's something that you participate in, and you give your best to it. You put your heart in it. And I think that's exactly what she did with this piece. The fact that that banjo on the beginning of the Texas Hold'em, man, that speaks volume about black people, and that whole banjo thing, where it came from and how it was taken away and put in a genre that we weren't allowed to participate in. The fact that she introduced Linda Martell and told her story, how her story resonates. That's what this is supposed to be about. Music is supposed to be provoking. It's supposed to have give you something that makes you want to go beyond those grooves, beyond hearing it. And that's what this does. This makes you want to find out who Linda Martell was. You know, and it gives such deep and rooted insight as to the lifestyle of people in Texas and South Carolina and South. I think it's a marvelous piece of music, one of the best pieces I've ever heard.
Wow. let me jump in here at seven at the time, because you said it, you put it on the level of Key of Life, and people think that Stevie's magnum opus, if you will. That particular recording was so perfect, they think it was the best album. You're saying you put in, Carter Country? Is that the title of it?
Yeah.
You put in on that same level?
On the same level. I mean, really, this is about as close as you can get to perfect. The only thing, there's just one thing about it, and it was the same criticism with Stevie's, too. It's a bit too long. The 27 cut. But within, they're not all music cut, they're intro cuts and what have you. But, you know, and Stevie came out with three pieces, so that was as long as well. But the point is that she... You hear in here in this piece, you hear a little bit of Rosetta Tharpe. There's so much in this piece that you have to sit down and listen to it multiple times in order to hear and understand what she's done. You hear elements of the Staple Singers, the Beach Boys. You know, all these people and these artists are somehow represented in this music and done flawlessly. Her vocal ability is unquestionable. This woman can sing. And she can sing lead, she can sing background. I never thought that I would hear the song Blackbird done by anyone else that was as good, if not better, than what Paul McCartney did. And he wrote it, and he did a marvelous job. And I've heard it done by other people, but man, what she does with it is unbelievable. The harmony, the changes, the flawless motion from changing keys. I'm telling you, this is really something special.
Raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
And I would suggest that not only black people, I think everyone should take a listen to this album. And look at it for what it is. It's a masterpiece.
Wow. Let me bring in Kevin here, because Kevin's our music guy. Kevin.
Good morning.
Do you agree with what Iris said? Is it that great?
Well, I haven't listened to the
album. Well, before you said, I got a couple of tweets. And Ira worked on Steve on Key of Life, and they disagree. So let me just say that, because they think that that was the ultimate recording, Key of Life, Stevie's Key of Life. But let me add that before I let you respond to what Ira says. It's on that level. Your thoughts?
Well, opinions vary. Okay, and Ira worked on Stevie Wonder's album, so that's a whole different... a brand of authenticity right there. You know, you're right there next to the master. Now, to me, the difference between Songs in the Key, and remember, I haven't listened to Beyonce's album. I've only read different critiques from the New York Times and the Washington Post, which I want to ask you about, Ira. But to me, it was a long anticipated, waited for album, Songs in the Key of Life, right? And everything that Stevie did in Key was original. It was him. It was all Stevie. Now, the difference, based on what I read now about Beyonce's album, is those references to Rosetta Tharpe and the Beach Boys. It was when she turned, it was like they turned, she was turning radio stations and Rosetta Tharpe would come on. She turned the station and the Beatles come on. She turned the station and then she'd get into her music. And so... because she's grabbing excerpts and many of the critiques in the newspaper, they're not being kind to her at all. Many of the critiques in the newspaper are talking about how many producers, how many credits on her album, you know, for one of the songs, that like 27 credits, is Jean-Baptiste from the that nighttime talk show, and there's a lot of people getting credits, but it's because she's taking excerpts of so many things. So I think that, and meanwhile, I think that the Beyonce album is a collector's item, and I haven't listened to it, but I think one day they're going to look back at this art form as something totally unique, like you said, even though it is captivating the country genre. It is also, like Beyonce said, it's a Beyonce album. But I wanted to ask you about the double use of the letter I. And because in each song in the American, what is it called? The American Requiem that she does, she uses two I's. I believe that when she did Blackbird and spelled it with two I's is because Blackbird, originally written by Paul McCartney, was about a black woman and the plight of black women. So when she put that double I in Blackbird, she's talking about I, the Blackbird. Would you agree, disagree? Let me know what you think.
I agree with that. I think
it's
that's
genius.
But getting back to Stevie's Something in the Key of Life is in the genre that Stevie functioned in.
Yes.
This out of Beyonce's purview. She stepped out of what she's comfortable in and took on this album as with the Texas, with the country flavor. So she could have stayed in her lane and done something that, you know, people would like that was typically Beyonce. But to step outside of it, to go someplace where you know you're comfortable and you know you can execute, but the public doesn't. I think that that's what makes this real. And the fact that she had such great musicians. And Stevie had great musicians on his, even though he did most of it himself. I mean, when you talk about Stevie, you're talking about the band. Stevie does it all. He sings, plays. You know, he's the band.
Sings, plays, right.
Exactly. But, you know, she pulled pieces together. She brought people in. She brought black women in. That lady Gibbons, who plays the banjo. I mean, she's good. You know, and these people all came together. The production is smooth, it's flawless. The changes are beautiful. So if people don't like it because she uses clips, I think that's delightful.
Okay. Many of these critics.
Well, hold that thought right there, Kevin, because we got to take a break. You got on me the last time. It's 14 after the top. Yeah. Here. I'll let you pose your question to Ira when we come back. Let me just tell the audience, too. Stevie's a part of that production of this album with Beyonce, along with Nile Rodgers and a lot of other folks who are involved in this production. 14 after the top of our family. We're talking about Carter Country. What are your thoughts on Beyonce doing country music? What are your thoughts? Reach out to us at 800-450-7876. Your phone calls in 4 minutes right here in Baltimore on 1010 WLB. Also in the DMV, we're on FM 95.9 and AM 1450 WOL, where information is power. Happy Monday, family. 21 minutes after the top there. We're talking music with Ira Tucker, Ira Tucker Jr. Ira has been around music all his life. As I mentioned, he was Stevie's publicist for decades. His dad sang the lead for the Dixie Hummingbirds. His sister sang in the Supremes. And here we're talking about Beyonce's album that dropped on Friday, Carter Country, because Beyonce's getting some pushback on whether the album is, the people who, the country folks, most of this coming from them, who's saying that she needs to stay in her lane. In fact, one of the shows, I understand that Alan Jackson, one of the big country stars, who had walked out, he was sitting on the front row when she came to perform at a country show on television. So the country people are kind of upset because they think she's going to take over. But Kevin, you had a question for Iris. I'm going to let you pose your question.
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, the album is Cowboy Carter. And she's sitting dressed in red, white, and blue, riding a white horse. And some people compare that to her Lemonade album, where she was setting the record straight about some things happening in her life. And mm-hmm. they say that Cowboy Carter is her setting things straight about being dissed at the Country Music Awards back in 2016. And what I was asking you about, Ira, was that whole use of the double I inside of each song. Every song that has an I in it, there are two I's in it. And as soon as I can get our computer rebooted, I'd like to play a little bit of Blackbird. But you were explaining the similarities between her expression of art and Stevie Wonder's expression of art. And so you're saying she's taking things from our lexicon, songs by Rosetta Thorpe and songs. She's got Willie Nelson doing a little rap on it. Dolly Parton does a rap. And you're saying that that's her opus.
Yeah, I feel as though she didn't really take any. She used the little clips, and she used them in the context of being on the radio. So if you're dialing the radio, you hear these various different, you know, like they used to have dials on radio, but you hear these various clips, these little pieces of stuff. And if you know who they are, then it resonates with you. But if you don't know who they are, then it's incumbent upon you, if you're interested, to find out who are these people that's on the radio that she's referencing. But she does give them life, as she puts light on to Linda Martell. See, knowledge is power, and she's giving us information that if you're interested, check it out. Find out who these people are, even though we're not in her mainstream flow. We're not there. She's not doing her regular Beyoncé thing. But she's doing it in this. And I totally agree with you about being on that horse. I think that's exactly what that statement is. She's saying, America, I'm here with my cowboy hat on and the flag.
And I think she's saying, you and the horse you rode in on.
Exactly. I didn't want to say it, but yeah.
Yeah, she's beautiful. She's a beautiful woman.
That's exactly what she's saying. That's what it is.
And you know, Ira, let me jump in here, because we want to talk about the packaging, the marketing of this particular record. Because you say it's not a country, it's just a Beyoncé album. But I want to go back to Stevie, though. Hotter Than July, I Ain't Gonna Stand For It. You know what I was doing to talk to someone of our mutual friends about country music? And he said, well, Stevie did a country song. And I said, right. Which one? I Ain't Gonna Stand. Can you tell us about that?
Well, sure, man. I mean, that's one of my favorite songs, you know, because, and it is country. And he did more than one. I mean, the fact that he starts out singing somebody da da dee doo. I mean, that's straight up country sound, you know. You know, Stevie explored. He did a lot of different genres. I mean, look at the Secret Life of Plants. You know, that was way out of his range. He stepped over there and did that entire piece. You know, operatic in tone, full orchestra. The whole bit. I think artists need to step out of their comfort zone and try new things. And sometimes it clicks and sometimes it doesn't. But if you're willing to take that shot and it does click, it broadens you as an artist.
Well, let me jump in and ask you this then, Ira. I hate to keep you interrupting, but I ask you this. Mm-hmm. If people who say that it's a country, if you were an R&B fan, a rap, a hip hop, and you say, oh, Beyoncé got a country album, I don't dig country. I'm not going to listen to it. Does the whole marketing process backfire then for some folks that you're trying to reach? Or say, oh, it's a country album. I'm not going to listen to it.
You're not going to reach everybody anyway. I mean, there are people who will say they don't want to hear it without even hearing it at all, simply because it's different. It's country. Look at Ray Charles. Ray Charles did all of those country songs back in the 60s. I mean, back, yeah, 60s. He did those country songs. And they were hits. You know, I Can't Stop Loving You. You know, I made up my mind. I mean, those are country songs. He and Ray just went from straight up R&B. I got a woman way across town that's good to me, to doing these country songs. And nobody complained. No one said that he should stay in his lane. People listened and they like it, but we're in a different time now. We're in a different mindset. People are a lot different than they were then. They're less accepting now because they're more critical. They accepted back then. If they liked it, it didn't matter because they liked the music. They liked what you did with it. But now people are very critical because everyone wants to be an analyst. Everyone wants to make sure their opinion registers so they can opinionate. But in terms of country music and being there, and you can either like it or you don't. You don't have to like it if you don't want to, but at least give it a listen.
And
you know,
Ira,
if you're going to... Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Do you think that the music critic is kind of like an ancient tool now? I mean, because people can get the music wherever they want. It's instantly on Spotify and Pandora. They don't really need critics. They listen to whatever they want to listen to, including our favorite, you know, terrestrial radio. People listen from many different sources, and they don't really need someone to say, okay, you should listen to this. This is art. This isn't. Do we really need that?
And you're exactly right, because people will listen to the music and then do their podcast.
Yeah.
And become analysts themselves, you know, and start giving their opinions about it over a podcast. So because everything has opened up and have become more accessible, it kind of lessens the role of the person who would give you the information about a piece or give you their opinion about it. I mean, at one point in time, when we did Songs in the Key of Life, we courted the media. We took the media in New York. I think it was 85 people. We flew them from New York to Worcester, Massachusetts. And we did a day in the Key of Life so that they would get a full feeling and understand what Stevie was trying to project in that album. And it was a wonderful experience because there were hayrides and people got to listen to it in the correct setting. It was just a beautiful experience that we all shared. And when the people wrote about Songs in the Key of Life, they wrote what they felt. They wrote because they were impressed with the way it was presented. Nowadays, it's a different thing.
Yeah, hold that thought there. We've got a bunch of folks who want to talk to you. 30 minutes after the top. Yeah, let's go to Marilyn on line two, calling for Marilyn. Marilyn, you're on with Ira Tucker Jr.
Thank you. I have an 18-year-old daughter who listens to all kinds of music. She listens to soul. She listens to K-pop. She listens to R&B. She listens to J-pop. And she listened to Beyonce's album and started asking questions about the black country artists that are noted in the album, which I could really appreciate because my daughter is eclectic. I'm 54, but the fact that it piqued her interest to want to find out more about the different artists that Beyonce had, you know, showcased in her album, to me was masterful on Beyonce's part, because young people otherwise may not look for this. You know, young people otherwise may not be interested, but Beyonce has piqued their interest. So I wanted to, and my daughter's not a part of the Beehive, but she appreciates different kinds of music from Beyonce. But I just wanted to say, you know, how much I appreciate the introduction that Beyonce has done to our young people and her Beehive, to the country artists, black and otherwise, that are showcased in her album.
I agree with you 100%, and your daughter is really on the right track, and that makes Beyonce correct in what she did. She provoked a thought. she presented something that your daughter found interesting enough and intriguing enough to want to find out more about it because she didn't know about it. That's exactly what an artist is supposed to do. We're supposed to bring that information to you. And if you want to seek it out to find out what it's about, then you do that. And your daughter did the right thing, and I applaud her for it. And I hope she continues to be an open vessel for things to come to her, and she can assess them and make her own opinion about them.
Right. All right. Thank you. Y'all have a good day.
All right. Thanks, Marilyn. So, we come up on a break. Let's take the break. We come back because some more folks want to talk to you. But the pushback that she's getting, do you think it's political or do you think it's just a musical taste? I'll let you respond to that, and then we'll talk to Deidre and Kareem as well. I want to talk to you as well. Family, you want to join this discussion with Ira Tucker Jr., reach out to us at 800-450-7876. Your phone calls in 4 minutes right here in Baltimore on 1010 WOLB. Free in the DMV, we're on FM 95.9 and AM 1450 WOL, where information is power.
Now back to the Carl Nelson Show.
Wow. Good morning, family. 21 minutes away from the top. I was part of one of Beyonce's song, her album that dropped on Friday, Cowboy Carter. And she's getting some pushback because some of the people in the country world think she should stay in her lane. Ira Tucker's our guest, and Ira's a publicist. He's been around music all his life. As I mentioned, his dad was the lead singer for the Dixie Hummingbirds. His sister sang with the Supremes. She was one of the members of the Supremes. And he was Stevie's publicist for many decades. Ira, part of the pushback is the Dolly Parton song, Jolene. She changed the words on that, and some of the country people thought that was sacrilegious. Your thoughts?
I don't think it's sacrilegious at all. If Dolly Parton okayed that, she couldn't have done it if Dolly Parton had said no. Dolly Parton okayed that. And the difference is that in Dolly Parton's song, she's begging this woman not to take her husband, not to leave her husband alone. Just don't take him. Beyonce is giving a warning. She's saying, hey, don't come after my man, you know? And I think that element and that adjustment of the lyrics reflects today and what the society that we're in today. It's one thing to say, please don't take my man, leave him alone. But it's another thing to say, you know what? Don't come this way because this is not for you. And I love the fact that it's a very strong position. And again, it's the kind of position that today's woman would take. This is not somebody begging you to leave their man alone. This is someone telling you. So I agree with it. And I think that she couldn't have done it. Not just think, I know that she couldn't have done it unless Dolly Parton signed off on it.
All right. 19 away from the top. On line one, Deidre's calling us from Baltimore. Deidre, you're on with Ira Tucker Jr.
Oh, praise the Lord. Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, y'all. Sorry about the gentleman thing. But I just want to say that I don't follow music, but when I heard Love on Top, I loved the song before I even knew it was Beyonce singing it. But now I am a Beyonce fan. I love Jolene. So if the haters want to not get the stuff, she got a new fan in me. So God is good. She's her fan base. And I'm 65. And for Beyonce.
I heard that.
Thanks, Deidre.
All right.
And speak to that for a little bit, Ira, about artists going over into different genres. We saw, I think Kevin and I talked about Kanye West. He went in the gospel lane for a second. Was it Jesus? What's the title, Kevin? I know you know.
It was Jesus Walks.
Jesus Walks, right. And it was the number one hit. Is that a chance for them to broaden their artists? Because when we were talking a lot about Steve, since you worked with him, and you know he opened for the Rolling Stones, was that a is that with the artist and the marketing part of the album. Was that to attract those people to their music? Is this is what we're seeing with Beyonce?
Well, I think that it's incumbent upon the artist to make the decision as to whether or not they want to give another arena a shot. If they feel as though they're capable and they have the material and their heart is in it, then you approach it as if it's your baby and you do it. I mean, Smokey Robinson did a gospel album. And we talk about Rosetta Tharpe. Rosetta Tharpe was one of the original crossover people. She crossed over from gospel into singing with the Lucky Milliner Band back in the day, which shocked the entire gospel world. You know, I mean, Sam Cooke left gospel music and became an R&B singer. So these people, this has been going on. And it's not something that people are afraid to do. Some artists feel as though they need to expand, they need to grow, they need to try something different. And you just hope that you can bring your audience with you. I think that in this situation, Beyonce won out, because I think she did bring the audience with her. And I think that it didn't hurt her fan base at all. And I think that it did get new people to listen to her. I think it also got people who are interested in history and what goes on. It got them involved as well. And those folks who really have a real thing about it, like the people who said she needs to stay in her lane, or, you know, they just need that sometimes people need to try to do it all that kind of stuff. We really know what that's about. Now, they can say whatever they want, but we know what that is about.
Yeah. And speaking about crossing, you know, as you know, the Bull has been threatening to do a gospel album. At least he promised his mom. But he's still working on it, he says. Do you think Stevie does that whenever he completes that gospel album? Because, you know, he kind of does things in pieces and then puts them together. Do you think that will push him into that gospel lane, much as like what's going on with Beyonce here?
No, see, I really don't think that Beyonce is going to stay in this type of music. I think this is an album. This is a project. This is something that she did to make a statement about her life and also to make a statement as to what's happened to her. I think if Stevie comes out with a gospel album, he's not going to stay in gospel. He's just put out an album, the same as Smokey. He put out a gospel album. Sometimes you need to express yourself in other areas and also make your audience aware that you are aware of this type of music, that you're cognizant of this type of music. So I don't think that putting out an album in country or in gospel or in any other jazz or any other genre, I don't think that makes the artist a part of that genre or sets them in a position where they'll be doing that by themselves. Rosetta Tharpe switched over and went into popular music, and then you know what? She went right back. And they welcomed her back. Because if they love you, they love you. And if they like what you've done, if they see that you've put the work in, then they'll support you.
So, Ira, let me ask you about this. When she, mm-hmm. when Beyonce covered "Good Vibrations" by the Beach Boys and used Nancy Sinatra's track, a little bit of Nancy Sinatra's "These Boots Are Made for Walking." What did you mm-hmm. think? What did you think of that? And that's less country, you know, when she threw in, you know, the Beach Boys and Chuck Berry.
Right. I loved it because I think what she was doing, she didn't actually run the lyrics or she didn't actually have it directly like it. She did a version of it. It sounded like you could hear it, but it wasn't the same thing. It was different. It wasn't the same lyrics. So she included those as color. That's color that broadens, makes it more interesting. So as you're listening to it, here's something that you've heard before. So now you know what that is. You can relate to it. The same thing with Stevie when he did the piece Living for the City. You know, we had an entire piece that we did about a guy being picked up on the street. You know, it was Steve's brother doing that part. But it was something that was colorful. It added to it. And I think that the boots walking thing, Nancy Sinatra thing, that was wonderful. And also it showed you the creativity of the artist. You know, that they're just not doing one thing. They see the big picture. So I applaud them for that type of stuff. I really do. I think that's part of being creative.
Well, let me ask you this then. What about Sam Cooke? When Sam left the gospel, let's say left the gospel, he went into R&B. He got a lot of heat for that.
Tremendous. And so did the rest of them. Because gospel music, when they embrace you, they want you to stay in their arms forever. Sam was theirs. He started out in gospel. And he made his name singing gospel. So when he left, it was almost like a divorce. People were hurt because he went to something else. But then what happened? They got to like him and what he was doing. So he became a hit and what he was doing. And the people got over the fact that he had gone. It now became he moved over and brought something to this new music that had an element of gospel. His voice had an element of gospel attached to what he was doing in R&B. Ray Charles was the same way. So when you go over, sometimes people are hurt because they don't want you to leave. Rosetta Tharpe was one of the few people who could switch and then go back and not lose a fan. She was one of the few who could do that. But most of them, once they take that step and they say, I'm going to become, and I'm not just putting out an album, I'm going to be an R&B performer. This is going to be my genre from now on. That's a different thing. So if you're putting out an album just to show your creativity or to engage your audience, that's one thing, but when you step on that other side and say, this is what it's going to be, Brooke Benson, all of those guys, Lou Rawls, all of these people came out of gospel music. And people were very sad to see them go because they were such great performers, but they became great performers in R&B. So you still had them. You just had them in another genre.
Let me ask you this, though, Ira. Did your dad, the Dixie Hummingbirds, did they ever think about, consider going into R&B and leave gospel or do it R&B?
Nope. No. That's the one thing that I could never understand.
Wait a minute. Didn't they back up Paul Simon?
They backed up Paul Simon. That's as far as they got.
Yeah, but that was about Love Me Like a Rock became a number one hit, though, man.
Yes, it was.
They got a Grammy for it.
That's right. They got a Grammy for it.
But we still didn't think of them as a rock group. I see what you're saying.
But that was as far as they got. And they looked at that song as having some elements to it that they aspired to. Rock Me Like the Rock of Ages. Love Me Like a Rock. So they didn't mind singing that. But that's as far as they would go. And I didn't understand it and neither did my mother, because when Sam Cooke hit, it became a major hit. My mom was all over my dad. Like, hey, you know, maybe you need to change up. But my father said that he was meant to sing what he was singing. And that was what he was going to do. And he supported our family on the strength of his voice. So we're very honored and very happy to have my dad as a father and as a performer, too. Because we were big fans. And I love the fact that Love Me Like a Rock got him a Grammy. So my father said all of the songs that they did throughout all of the history of the Hummingbirds since 1928 and 2028 will be 100 years of the Dixie Hummingbirds in 2028. And so for all those years prior to his death, when they were singing, they never got a Grammy or any type of recognition like that. But when they did it with Paul Simon, that's when it opened up for them.
Yeah, they became international artists at that point, man.
Exactly.
Yeah. Kudos, kudos.
I'm looking at it a different way now. Is it white appreciation? Why couldn't they have got the recognition without, you know, hooking up with Paul Simon?
Because Paul became that, he was that person that could get the exposure. Because he was Paul Simon, he could get the exposure. And he got it. They nailed the background. And it was a great, great song. But when they did it on their own, see, they didn't get it because Paul did it. They re-recorded it on their own. And that's what they got the Grammy for. So
Ira, we got to take a short break. When we come back, Sarita in L.A. has a question for you about Beyonce. Family, you want to join this conversation, reach out to us at 800-450-7876. Your phone calls in 4 minutes right here in Baltimore on 1010 WOLB and in the DMV or on FM 95.9 and AM 1450 WOL, where information is power.
Raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
Yes.
And Grand Rising family, a minute after the top of the hour with Ira Tucker Jr. Ira is a publicist. As I mentioned earlier, his dad was the lead singer of the Dixie Hummingbirds. It's just a sang with the Supremes, and he's with Stevie's publicist for many decades. And somebody just sent me a tweet that today's Gil Scott Heron's birthday, and I know he was in Stevie's camp for quite a while. So I know you got a lot of Gil Scott Heron stories to share with us, but we're running out of time. Sarita wants to join us, though. She's calling from L.A. Talk about Beyonce. She's on line one. Sarita, good morning.
Good morning, Carl. Thank you for taking my call, and good morning to your guest. I just wanted to touch on, good morning. I am considered a Gen X according to society, and I was raised by someone considered the greatest generation, born in 1918. And so one of the things I can say about my dad's family, my mother's side too, but my dad's family knew music. And so my mom, I was exposed to country, African, R&B, rock, all of it, you name it, I had the exposure to it. But if you recall, you remember when Tina Turner, when she left Ike, she decided she wanted to go rock and roll instead of going in the R&B, continuing that it just be completely R&B. She wanted to dabble in something else. And also, Lionel Richie did some country as well. So the dabbling has been going on for quite some time. I agree with you when you said it has to do with way more than what we're talking about. And that is, and in my opinion, white folks being afraid or assuming that country is theirs when it's first of all not, but also afraid of what the outcome will be, because anything we touch, we are better at it, and that's just the bottom line. But I am so elated that Beyonce took the route because now it allows generations behind me to be more exposed. And even though I played country music here and there, it wasn't enough like my mom did for me. But I think it's important that we do expose our children to different genres. And I agree with you. When I found out how many different people she had on her album, I said she absolutely did the right thing. But if you research it, I read where, I can't remember her name. A white actress had been looking for country black people to you know, share with the world, because we are out there. It's just a matter of us being exposed to it. But my question to you is that do you believe that people can, how can I, oh, when you were saying regarding the crossover, and I remember when you said that, I remember during the Motown years when they were saying, well, you're going to so-and-so country because you're crossing over, you're crossing over. So do you believe that a lot of the R&B singers that are younger will start to begin to dabble into different genres? And I'll take my comment. And how do you feel like it'll explore music for the younger generation? How do you think they'll be more receptive? And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Well, I would hope that they would, because in my opinion, it only broadens your perspective in music. It opens you up to other types of sounds, other progressions. Sometimes we get locked into what we do, and you can't get out because you don't have any place to go. You don't know how to get out because you lock yourself into a certain type of playing. You use certain chords all the time. It gets to be almost like being confined. But when you open up and you listen to classical music, or you listen to jazz, or listen to country music, you listen to music that are different than what you're in, but you listen to them with the same ear that you would listen to something that would be in the field that you were in, because you want to expand. And music is something that it's called a universal language, because music is everywhere. People can relate to music no matter where you are. There's some music going on somewhere. So if you can expand your yourself to the point where you can connect, or maybe if you just listen to some classical music and you hear a group of chords that resonate with you, you say, oh, you know what? I love that. I can put that in this. See, that works for me, because that's what music is about, sharing. It's about being able to make what you do your thing, and using chords from other people, or using this from the, it used to be a thing back in the day when the rappers came out, it was called sampling. And sampling was that's how they got off the ground, through sampling music. So it's always been a point of trying to share, trying to use.
Right. And I'm going to go to that because we got Dr. Taylor on deck, and Sister Denise is calling from Richmond. Has a question for you. She's online too. Sister Denise, your question real quick for Ira.
Yes, I know the time is limited. Thank you, Hotep. Thank you, Brother Carl, for having me, allowing me to speak. And I really am appreciating the dialogue. Sister Beyonce, that sister can sing. She's very diversified, and I really appreciate her bringing and exposing these other sisters that's been doing music, country music, forever. Our people have just given the world everything. I just wanted to make note, the reason why I was really calling in is because on NPR, I was listening to it yesterday, and they were stating that people who have pre-ordered Sister Beyonce's music, a lot of the songs are missing on the pre-order, and a lot of them are demanding their money back. And I'm just wondering, do you think that was politically sabotage, trying to destroy her image and, you know, this album? Have a wonderful day. Thank you so much for allowing me to share.
I didn't know anything about that. I really didn't. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that would happen either, because usually that's a well-coordinated mm-hmm. thing between the artist, the distributors, the people who get the music and distribute the music. But if all of the music and all of the songs aren't there, I don't blame people for asking for their money back. But I don't think that has anything to do with Beyonce. That is a mechanical piece that belongs to the system that gets it to the listener. So
I said the download issue. But listen, Ira, we got to go real quick, but let me ask you this. It's April 1st, and we have to acknowledge this is the day that when we found out some years ago the Marvin Gaye got killed. Do you remember where you were?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. I was in Los Angeles, and I was the one that called Steve and told him. So it was an extremely sad time, a shocking time. And I was fortunate to hear about it shortly right after it happened. A friend who was there and they called me and told me that Marvin had gotten shot. So it was one of the, and I thought he was pranking me because it was April Fool's
Day. April Fool's Day, yeah.
I really thought
well,
that's
let me
what
share
it
this
was.
With you. You know, it was a weekend. It was a Saturday. I was home, and the DJ was on. He was a weekend guy, part time, and he says, "Man, people calling up and saying that Marvin got shot." And I says, "April Fool's Day, and they're pranking you." He says, "No, no," and he says, "This lady, they took him to California Hospital in downtown L.A. This mm-hmm. nurse called and asked for you and says it's true. Marvin's right there, and he's dead." So I said, "Oh, wow." It was mind blowing. You're right. It was a crazy time for us back then.
It was something that again it was akin to what happened to Sam Cooke. You know, it was the same type of feeling. You know, my goodness, he's gone. It was so hard to believe that Marvin was gone, and the way that he went at the hands of his father. The way that Sam Cooke went, you know, these people were taken away from us at an age, at a time when they were at the top of their game, you know, and we look forward to other music coming from them, but yet they were taken out. Marvin's thing just wrecked me. I was so hurt behind that because we had been in the studio with him. He did a show at the place called the Speakeasy in West Hollywood. We were all there. I mean, and Marvin was just—he was just a special guy, you know. I mean, he really was. He wasn't a overt person out there yelling. Marvin was kind of quiet, but he was powerful, you know. And again, he came out of a gospel background. He sang and played in the church and sung in a quartet. So he crossed over as well. So
Marvin, a DC guy. Ira, we're going to let you go, but thank you for sharing your thoughts with us this morning. I learned a lot in the background about music and Beyonce, the challenges that she faces. It seems like some people just don't like the fact that because she is Beyonce, and as you mentioned, it's not a country album. It's a Beyonce album. Thank you for pointing that out for us.
Well, thank you for having me, and to your audience, thank everyone out there. Be careful, and it's really a pleasure talking to you and to your audience.